So next is chapter 14, Death of a Monkey. A rather disappointing and deplorable incident I reported in my diary on the 23rd of February 1967. Because of this occurrence, I began to ask Siti to tell me more about the life of Satura and most of the time I spent on board the spacecraft writing biography of Satura together with what I believe to be their cosmo-philosophic religion. Easy enough it was to make the notes in several languages and using shorthand, but to put all this down in one and the same human language, not being a professional writer, will take me several years. Because of what happened on the 23rd of February 1967, I shall do it. In the early morning of this unforgettable day, while I was still asleep, Mr. Satura, used to a different sleeping habit, had ventured outside the plantation to pay a short visit to the Indian plantation helpers. I think I have mentioned before that on other fringes of the Mirim headquarters, the tribesmen had built some provisional palm huts for their women and children. With the exception of Turu, the Indians liked to live with our friends because of the benefits and privilege of medical attention, the good fruit, etc. The Itibirayans granted. During the night, a fight between the Indians from the Lenislan area and those having lived with the Mirim scientists resulted in the killing of Turu's father and another tribesman. At dawn, the Lenislan helpers had disappeared. The Mirim Indians made preparations for the funeral of the deceased. Perhaps the word funeral is a wrong expression, because according to their custom, these cannibals do not bury or cremate their dead, but instead they are roasted over a huge open fire and eaten clean to the bones. It is their view, and this reminds me very much about what Australian guide told me in Coitos, that it would not be any worse to eat a dead man than to eat a dead beast or animal, as the roasted meat tastes the same or even better. The cannibals' funeral feast, with the bodies serving for the feast itself, had to be celebrated according to an old custom. The Mirim Indians called it Mang Mang Mang, which means the slow beating to death of an outgrown female wool monkey. During the night, they have caught a perfect specimen for this purpose, which they describe as an akka or monkey grandmother. The unlucky old creature had fallen into one of the many banana traps and was immediately taken to the funeral fiesta. Very close to the dead bodies, the monkey was then spread flat on the ground, and all the tribesmen with their women and children took turns in the religious ceremony. The death of a thousand strikes. The following explanation for this cruelty was offered voluntarily by Turu. With wild gestures, he indicated that the demons and devils of the great jungle, not only the roasted flesh, he said, is depatched with ceremonial guesto, but the ear-piercing shrieks of the tortured animal are supposed to keep devils and demons at a distance. But why monkeys, I asked, and in particular an old female monkey? There, Turu did not know what to say, except that it is just was the custom. I was revolted by the story of the cruelty which caused the sensitive female monkey such agony. Her agonized shrieks must have been heard deep in the jungle. Merciful death at last released her from her immeasurable suffering. The Indians then placed the body with other human corpses over an open fire which consumed her wolfic hair. It must have been at this moment, I believe, that Mr. Satura arrived at the scene. The full-grown monkey grandmother, completely bare without hair, must have looked to Satura exactly like an 7 to 10 years old human girl. The roosting of Turu's relative, the smell and odor of burning meat must have given the Itibira Ryan Bigelis a shock. From Turu I found out what happened next. Not feeling embraced by Mr. Satura's arrival at the scene, the Indians offered him to take a bite. When he objected and ordered them to release the bodies and have them burned, the tribesmen got mad. There wasn't much Mr. Satura could do. Perhaps those Indians in religious fanatism or traditional custom were used to the habit of torturing. But what about our intelligent doctors using the same animal for vivisection, say Mr. Pullman in parenthesis to this. Well, further, what must have gone through the mind of my beloved friend Mr. Satura that morning on February 23rd, 67? Wonder City, I know that slowly, like a dream walking, he had returned to the spacecraft. We did not see the spacecraft commander for 2 full days and nights. I was told that he had retired to his headquarters to hold a Maina memorial for the dead monkey. He had not taken food nor drink during his voluntary fast, nor did he want to be disturbed, not even through the communication computers. It was Mr. Hua, the second in command, who had taken over security and disciplinary matters. Was Satura, besides being the most responsible scientist of the entire space fleet, also their religious leader? I asked Siti. In the evening of this unforgettable day, she finally agreed to talk about her brother, and I shall include his biography with this book. There is plenty of evidence. After I had the time to study my jungle diary, that the Itibiraians consider all higher developed monkeys as part of the great cosmic human family. To them, meat-eating human beings are much closer related to the big apes than to Itibiraian human beings. As Siti explained, your habit of killing children and women in war does not differ at all from the cruelty from the Miriam River Indians killing an old monkey grandmother. The religious fast my friend from outer space was holding, this sit-in, as our stronger generation may say. He offered out of his own sincere belief in God. Again and again I asked Siti, because of the poetic evening prayer Siti had made me write, I was convinced that I do believe in God. But what kind of God? A personal God? An impersonal God? Or perhaps, as I began to suspect, God nature, with nature being God itself. The symbol of Lenny's Lawn, was it really the symbol of this God? Was I offered finally as a new and original pattern of their way of believing in God? I consider the original form of their cosmo-philosophic pattern. From the 23rd to the 26th of February, I filled the last part of my notebook with interesting notes all about the religious beliefs of my friends, their ceremonies, habits, and even sacred holidays. The amazing fact was that during our discussions, I was informed that there are civilizations in cosmos having formed some kind of an intercosmic ring. All these civilizations live on planets with much the same life-spanning conditions as our planet Earth. Normally, because of this, I immediately asked Siti if there was a possibility that these people, like science fiction pretends, could invade our world and destroy every human being on Earth. Perhaps, I said to Siti, they would want to do so because of our cruelty. But smiling midly, she said, your cruelty is part of your general development pattern. In other words, our friends believe that the higher we step up the ladder of evolution, the less cruel and selfish humanity should be. On the 25th of February, I found a note in my diary. Humanity in cosmos could not exist if they lived selfishly and cruel. They could not exist if they could not love the God nature. Since the days I noted Siti's word, I have come to believe that true religion on earth has not even been born. That is not necessary to start new religious beliefs or even reform those available to our souls. But this I do know, with the help of the cosmo-philosophy, we shall find the way to true religion. Perhaps doing so, we shall take another look at our present misinformed views and return to the simplicity of our original leaders, Buddha, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, and many or more. Perhaps through cosmo-philosophy we shall come to understand that all of us live in one and the same motherland, that this motherland, this beautiful planet of ours, is part of a greater intercosmic development pattern with many civilizations belonging to the same great human family. I must also read a footnote. Talion, the greatest of all Raian reformers, altered the concept of a superstitious belief in personal God into the now universal accepted belief that God nature. After the retirement of Talion as Intibi Raian president and religious leader, the word God was never again used. Instead, it became God nature. Go on. I finished the footnote. Well, but most of all, because of cosmo-philosophy, humanity shall find out very soon that this mother planet of ours is big and powerful enough to make a decent living possible to all our suffering brothers and sisters. It is all up to us, to every one of us. And when shall we find this out, I asked. As soon as you stop hating and killing each other, was Sita's logical answer. That was end of chapter 14. It have now gone about 15 minutes, and I go on with chapter 15. The last was chapter 14. Chapter 15, The Cancer Planet. On February 26, 1967, shortly before I wanted to retire, it must have been between 10 or 11 p.m., I was told by Siti that Mr. Satura wanted to see me in his communication center located in the middle lower section of the spacecraft. I had never been there. It was Siti herself who took me. Satura was not alone. Most of the scientists were with him, seated comfortably. What I noticed was their very solemn expressions. During an interview of about only 2 minutes, I was informed that the Itibirians had received a command to evacuate the plantations and return to their mother planet. It was Siti again who showed me the way out, but before I left, Satura offered me his sincere thanks for my assistance to his sister in Lima. Then Mr. Hua, in the name of all the scientists, who did not talk to me as did not carry language computers, said thank you for my help in finding the wonderful guayaba plant. All this happened very fast. I did not know what to think. At about 12:30, when I still could not find sleep, I got up. With great difficulty, I found my way down to the centrally located communication center. Perhaps Satura, now all by himself, had felt my approach and invited me to come inside this his most private quarters. Here, sipping the exotic fine flavors of his favorite juices, we stayed together until dawn, talking and discussing many unforgettable subjects. During these last 5 hours, I found out many things about my friends. Because of the very informal atmosphere, I did not mind asking Satura questions of such a personal nature as to his age. I asked him about the future of humanity, about myself, about Siti, his parents, and his work. Satura, the most intelligent human I ever met, took all his time during our last conversation to give me sincere and friendly answers. What he mentioned about the 5 billion people of another planet far from their own, I believe to be of interest. It should be taken seriously as a warning. In 11,000 years since the last of the Atlantic islands submerged forever, only 22 to 25 generations of Itibirians have lived within the same time. It becomes obvious that with the tremendous power of their egg generators and intercosmic memory computers, the words of our friends should be taken seriously. To me, his religious wisdom has become a guiding light for my entire life. It is the reason why I began to write this book as soon as I returned to Lima. Cancer planets were mentioned during our conversation, and I asked many questions. A cancer planet, I was informed, is a universe of its own. A universe because people of such a planet sincerely believe they do not need God. They have advanced technically in such a way that they have created an entirely artificial pattern of life. They have invented the most sensational machines, gadgets, power equipments, artificial food, color, air, even artificial war machines and chemical weapons able to destroy their neighbors. Their artificial way of life has made them believe that they are superior to any other civilization in cosmos. But God, Mr. Satura said sadly, has given them cancer. Their inventions and creations, my friend said, are not like the Itabi Rain creations. They are not working in harmony with God nature, nor does God nature work in harmony with them. More than 70% of 5 billion people die of cancer. Still, they refuse to believe that cancer is no ordinary sickness. For many years, they hope for a cure, a self-made cure against nature. They refuse to believe that God is nature and nature is God. They want to feel superior to cosmophilosophic law, which says, disregarding the laws of nature is disregarding the laws of God, because God is nature and nature is God. Parenthesis, he says, I was able to understand that Itabi Rains do have a special religious laws against all excesses, including the use of artificial cancer-producing agents. I asked my friend to let me know these religious laws, and Satura dictated them to me. I call them the 7 cosmophilosophic commandments. Itabi Rains, he expressed, are very much concerned with this cancer planet, and he called this planet a total cosmic dropout. Satura described the contempt and superior pride of the cancer planet's people as a direct threat to other human beings in cosmos. He called it an obligation to correct this offense against nature and God. Not a political move, but a religious call for combined action. Not to kill or destroy, but to force the leaders of this cancer planet to return to the true wisdom of their ancestors' cosmophilosophy. How, I wanted to know, would they force them to do this? Mr. Satura explained that the combined plan was to interfere with cancer planets' established cosmic routing, and in particular its distance from its own sun. By doing so, they hope to freeze the planet into several progressive ice age periods. Listening to this, I couldn't help wondering if all this was serious. But Satura definitely insisted that their return to Itabi Ra 2 was due to this plan. Also, my friend believes that such a natural catastrophe would force the people on that planet to unite in self-defense against God nature and stop using the many self-produced artificial cancer agents. God nature shall force them to return to their former health. As final advice to all brothers and sisters on this our beloved planet Earth, my friend begs us to obey and study nature as a part of God. He said, with big letters, the forces of God are the forces of nature, and the forces of nature are the forces of God. The last remaining hour before the ETB rains took me to the Peruvian Highland Lake, the same location of our takeoff on the 17th of February 1967. I spent with Siti, who surprised me with an amazing present, a goodbye present and a present for my entire life, a present none of my readers would think possible or have the imagination to guess. That was down on chapter 15. Next is chapter 16, The Orphan Girl. But time has come to about 26 minutes, so I end this audio file here, and next begins with that chapter 16 then.